Felger and Mass.
Little sport dork orgy. So sporty.
Oh, yeah.
So sporty. Sports and sports and sports. Sports in your face. Sports.
Felger and Mass.
Awesome.
98.5. The Sports Hub.
All right, 4:04 in the afternoon, Felger and Mass on Agenda Free Friday, which is brought to you by Planet Fitness. The world judges they don't, planetfitness.com. Look what the cat dragged in, Mass.
Gasparino.
Christopher F. Gasper.
And on time.
That's for Lee. On time, ready to roll. Here in our Town Fair Tire Studios, Chris is brought to you by Mass General Hospital. Hi, Christopher.
What's going on, guys? So are you guys having some IT issues? I noticed there was a new Wi-Fi password.
Oh, I don't even go into that crap.
Yeah.
Did you get the heads up on that?
No, don't give the password.
I'm not going to give the password away, but I will say that it was spelled incorrectly.
Go on. Continue your conversation.
All right.
So, now, luckily, I happened to just look at it and not even look at the way it was spelled and just put it in the way I would put it in, and it worked. But I was like, ooh, it's a tough day for computer-related stuff.
And then they move the wires so everything gets disconnected and nothing works.
Chris has had to deal with these a couple of times on Saturdays with me.
Huh, I wouldn't guess that, Marty. Yeah.
You always it sounds so weird.
Yeah, Christopher, how do you feel about your football team?
The only reason I would be remotely concerned about this game, because I think Miami stinks, and I said this when they were 3-0, I thought they were a fraud team. It's all about the location, right? That's the only reason any of us are concerned about this game is the locale and the fact that weird things happen in Miami. The one interesting thing about the Dolphins is they do take the football away. They have 25 takeaways, which is the third most in the NFL. And the Patriots do have a tendency and a penchant to go down there and shoot themselves in the foot. But I look at that Miami offense, and I'm like, ugh. I mean, 29th in offense. They won last week. Tannehill threw for 137 yards, and he's the better of their two quarterbacks between Osweiler and him. So I just don't think the Dolphins are very good. I think this one's all about the Patriots. It's about them. It's not about the Dolphins. You know, can they go down there and perform and execute and whatever the demons have been in the past, whatever that is, put that out of their mind and go down there and take care of business against what to me is an inferior team. I'm sorry. They just are.
All right, let's mix in your phone line often with Chris. 617-779-0985. We've given away the packages, so don't call on the prizes. I want to bring in a caller who will make you want to root against the Patriots. This is how I would define. There's that Patriot fan where you're fine with the team, and then you have to listen to a certain Patriot fan, and then all of a sudden you.
Mike, I'm on Twitter. I know what you're talking about.
You want the Pats to lose? That's Chris and Raynham. Go ahead, Chris.
Hey guys, I just left actually beautiful Gillette Stadium for a work event, and it dawned on me the next time I'm going to be there is for the AFC Championship game, which you guys said there was no chance would be there in a few weeks, and I said it was going to happen. Big Jim Steelers are imploding, the team that he said was going to win the Super Bowl. The Chiefs are going to lose. The only team we have to slightly worry about is the Chargers, but this happens every year. These teams lose a big game within the last 2 to 3 weeks, and the Patriots sneak up to the one seed. Just a few weeks ago, you guys were playing what if for the wild card weekend. So I just wanted to come in here and say that they will be in the AFC Championship game again for the 8th straight season. Now, as for this week...
No, you know what? That's enough.
Did we ever say there was no chance that they'd host the AFC Championship game?
Go Dolphins. Go Dolphins. I mean, listening to Chris and Raymond wants me, it leads me to root for the other team. It does.
I can't root for Tannehill.
I can after listening to Chris, I can.
No.
I could root for the devil after listening to Chris. I could.
I thought you already did.
It's that particular brand of Patriot fan that just, it's like, go Dolphins now.
So, look, I'll tell you, like you said, it's all about the locale. And I hope you're listening, Chris. The Dolphins are 5-1 at home. The Patriots are 3-3 on the road. And two of those wins, Buffalo and the Jets.
And let's add Miami to the list. Because Miami started out 3-0. We all know they're 6-6 now, right? So they've won three games since. And to your point, two of those wins were at home. One was against the Jets in a game where there was not an offensive touchdown. Jerome Baker scored the only touchdown on an interception return. And the other one in the AFC was last week against the Bills. And they did have a win against Chicago in overtime. I just don't think they're very good. I mean, look, they're the next best team in the AFC. And look, anything,
AFC East.
AFC East, yes. Anything can happen down there. I mean, heck, they lost to Jay Cutler, washed up Jay Cutler down there last year. So look, anything can happen. But I think this is about them. Like, if they go and lose this game to Miami on the road, as much as we've talked about all the issues down there, playing in Miami, it to me would sort of be a bigger issue of this is a team that can't get it together on the road because Miami's not going to have, I heard the update, I mean, they're not going to have Xavier Howard, who's their best defensive player at this point of his career. There's not a lot going on with that offense. There are some talented players, but they haven't been able to put it together. So when I start thinking about it, the only way Miami wins is if the Patriots fall down and land flat on their faces. I mean, that's what it would take.
Why is that so out of the realm of possibility? And let me just clarify.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to happen either.
Okay.
But it would not shock me if the Patriots sucked this weekend. They've sucked on the road all year.
So if they do...
What good road game have they played, Chris?
Chicago is pretty good.
Eh.
What do you mean, eh? They
two special team scores.
Okay, but those
they gave
still
up 31
mattered.
To the
those,
Bears.
Those still count.
And it looks a hell of a lot better now than it did when it happened. Because
Bears
they seem
are
like
top
a bum
10 in
team.
Scoring. The Bears score points.
Yeah, I don't
against
think that...
pretty much everybody.
I still don't think they played great in that game. I don't. So I look at it and say they won the game, but they didn't play great. They lost to Detroit. They lost to Tennessee and got their faces ripped
yeah,
off.
Yeah, no one's arguing that they have played well on the road. That's why, to me, if they go and lose this game, then that's indicative of a bigger issue than simply they don't play well at Miami. You know, that it becomes an even bigger thing of this is a team that can't perform well on the road, that can't rise to the occasion, that can't sort of overcome adversity. So I'm not disagreeing with you about them not playing well on the road. You're discounting the Chicago victory to a little bit of an absurd degree to make your point, but I'm not overall disagreeing with you about it. I'm just saying, like, for me, you know, I think the situation is set up for them to go down there and win this game, and if they don't, then I think that speaks more to their greater inconsistency and their issues on the road than it does the fact that the game's in Miami.
Okay, so but back to Chris's point about we didn't think they could do it. To me, the line, for me, I think it was always Super Bowl. You know, I knew they'd win their games and they'd get to a certain level. And we were going over the wild card because they were 3 seed 2 weeks ago. So we were just looking at what the playoffs would be if they started tonight. But apparently, see, that upsets a guy like Chris that you even go over that. Either way, just to prove to you that I didn't discount this team for the AFC Championship game, we did pull the tape of how I feel about this team. I never felt they were a Super Bowl team, and I have evidence. What day is this from, Jimmy? What's the date on this?
This is August 23rd.
Ooh, wow,
August
early.
23rd.
Preseason. And you know what? Well, anyway, go ahead. This happened on August 23rd. With this group, at this age, coming off of no work in the spring, then, you know...
Yeah, it could be his greatest accomplishment.
I mean, you will be allowed to put a ball gag in me, McCone. You can ball gag me and tie me up and put me in the corner and do whatever you want with me. Okay?
Hard
so
pass,
that
yeah.
If he drags this group to the Super Bowl, ball gag me and throw me in the corner. So a caller mentioned this yesterday. We had to go back and pull up the tape. I did say that if Tom Brady leads this team to the Super Bowl, McBone can ball gag me, throw me in the corner, and do what he wants with me. So
where,
I guess
where he sheepishly goes, I'm okay. No.
So these are the stakes. I mean, a caller remembered it, so now I'm a man of my word. If the Patriots go to the Super Bowl, well,
you get the full Pulp Fiction.
Listen, I think I have an out because if Brady leads this team to the Super Bowl,
oh, here we go.
Has Brady led this team this year?
Oh, here we go.
Semantics.
This is
Weasley.
This is Weasley.
He's the quarterback, so yeah.
Okay, who gets credit for the win or the loss?
So listen, if the Patriots go to the Super Bowl, McCone, McBone can ball gag me and throw me in the corner and do what he wants with me. Okay, so
I'll check it out on Twitter.
So I just want to, I'm a man of my word. So if the Pats go to the Super Bowl, McCone ball gags me.
I'll check it out on Twitter.
Okay, second thing. Has Brady led them?
What do you mean, has he led them? What do you mean?
What's been the most important factor in their 9-3 record? And if they go to the Super Bowl, how will they have done it?
I mean, I think it's a little different than it's been in the past. It's certainly been more balanced. You know, I said this. Jones was on the other night talking about how Brady was
brilliant. They're winning
mediocre.
In spite of him.
Yeah, they're winning in spite of him.
No. He said, can they win in spite of their quarterback? Which even
Jones
I thought
is
was,
the best. He's a gem.
It's a little strong.
Can they overcome
Jones
him?
Jones is a regional treasure. He really is. But look, I think there's a line between MVP and mediocre, and he's been somewhere in between.
Exactly. So I don't see this isn't one of the.
So if you said lead, has he led them? Yes. Has he carried them? No.
Right. He hasn't carried them.
Okay.
Okay. So I mean, we're parsing words, but this isn't one of these years where Tom Brady goes out and puts 30 points on the board, or else they don't win. I mean, it just hasn't been that way this year.
That's true.
And
which I think bodes better for them in some ways.
Okay, so you think the defense is... We've been talking about this all
day.
Yeah,
I said from the beginning of the year, I expected the defense to be better than last year.
So they can win 24-21 games now, you think?
I think they can. Can they? Now, look, Am I sitting here saying they can win three of those in a row to lift the Lombardi Trophy? No. But if they have to win one of those along the way, I think they can win it.
What if they
I do? Okay, especially if it's at home.
What if they need a shootout? Because if you look, each of the last three, 4 years, at some point, they've had to put 30-plus points on the board, in some cases right around 40 to win. And they put 40 on the board last year and still lost. Or was it 41-38? Whatever it was.
41-33, wasn't it?
I can't remember the final score. So whatever. So to win last year, they would have had to score in the low 40s.
Yeah.
So even when they've been good defensively, the 2014 year, they had to get their ass into the 30s to win these games. Whether it was Baltimore at home in the divisional round or these Super Bowl games.
No, you're right about that.
If they have to do that this year, can they do it?
I think they can, particularly if they're at home. I mean, I still think that Brady can play better than he's played to this point in the year. Gronkowski obviously is not quite the same guy, but still just having him out there, I think, does make some sort of difference, and I think they can find better ways to use him in the red zone. Burkhead's back now. I'm not a huge Burkhead guy, but that's another weapon. I'd actually like to see them use him a little bit more in the slot.
So the offense has more to give.
I think they can be better than they've been. I do. I think there's still a little more room for improvement. And defensively, I'm just happy that I'm not going to look back there, and it's not going to be Eric Lee running around back there trying to make a play. It's not going to be Johnson Batamosi trying to make a play back there. I think they're better on defense than they were last year, and I felt all year long that they should be better. It's been inconsistent like the rest of the team, but I still think that this defense, I would not expect this defense to go to the Super Bowl and get completely torched the way that they did last year. I wouldn't expect that.
Okay, back to your phones with Gasper right after this.
Bye.
Duggar and Maz, the Sports Hub. Felger and Maz.
Wow.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Brady throwing, and that's incomplete as Gronkowski gets popped. Well, he took a shot.
A couple weeks in a row now, we're not seeing 87 run away from people or run people over.
Throw down the middle for Clark, makes the catch and absorbs the hit. Undercut by Smith.
He's getting up slow, too. They chopped him down right at mid-5.
You're not concerned about Rob Gronkowski's health at all. Are you f***ing okay?
Gronk is dead.
The injuries are starting to take their toll.
Gronk is dead.
Gronk is done.
Gronk is dead.
All right, Casper. Murray says Gronk is dead. Everyone says Gronk is dead. Everyone is pretty much consensus opinion. Gronk is dead and he's retiring after the year, or this is his last year with the Patriots. Consensus. I feel like that's how most people I've heard have put it. Bedard said he's just a slightly above average tight end. Actually, do you have the Bedard play it?
Gronk, the force, the monster, the Hall of Famer, the All Pro. You're going to see it in flashes here and there, especially when he has rest and he's feeling well. Maybe the divisional round, maybe the Super Bowl if they get there. Largely, he's going to be an above average, slightly above average tight end. And I think it would really behoove them to go out. They need to bring somebody in because I don't know how much longer he's going to last.
To the point where it's bring somebody in. But how do you feel? Is Gronk dead?
Dead? I think this year he's going to be severely compromised. I don't think you're ever going to see him healthy and 100%. And then he will have to make a decision after the year whether he wants to come back. Now, I think Brady will be tugging at him to come back. And
what if they ask him to take a pay cut?
One more year.
Because you know that's where we're headed.
Yeah, it does feel that way, doesn't it? I think he would say forget that. You know, that would be sort of the push-pull, right? But it's not. But if you take the incentives out of it that they offered him this year, right? It's not like he's making that much next year.
$10
million. Yeah, it's not that much.
For them, it's not. I agree. But it's more than he's worth, which you know how they feel about that.
I do. I do know how they feel about it. I think his injury situation is clouding this because I think it's worse than we've been led to believe. I really do. I don't think it's just like, have you heard of an ankle injury that lasts this long?
No. And again, the Achilles is the thing that's whispered about.
Yeah, exactly. So if that, let's say hypothetically it is the Achilles, right? And that's a situation where he can let that heal in the offseason. Now, you could blow it out at any time like Richard Sherman did, but let's say it heals and you feel much better and you're able to come back next year. I wouldn't be surprised if he's closer to what he was in 2017. You know, and even 2017, like that was a really good year for him. But was it 2010 or 2011? No, it wasn't.
Okay,
but I think he can be closer to that. Like, I think the injury is clouding it.
Let's say that is true, that he can be closer to what he was.
Yeah.
Are they going to guarantee the money?
What do you mean by guarantee the money?
Are they going to let him come in on a contract that pays him a base salary?
Well, he's on the books next year for. I said 10. It might be 11. It might be 9. But he's, you know,
ish.
That's the contract on the books. Yes. That's why he said, Mass. Would he accept a pay cut?
Yeah, there's no way they will just go in with that contract. Is the point? So like now they're betting on him being okay. They don't bet. They don't bet with contracts. Well,
but aren't their hands kind of tied? Like, if he wants to play and Brady wants him, isn't ownership going to step in sort of like
maybe.
Before?
Yep,
and
maybe.
Say, like, you know, this guy's on – Brady wants this guy on the team.
Yeah.
Brady says, I'm retiring unless this guy's on the team, unless he decides he retires.
And then Robert makes
They already tried to get rid of the guy.
Exactly.
Right?
And Robert –
So now maybe it comes – maybe it's another offseason of Tom and Bill, you know, who gets their way. Because maybe Bill says – let's release this guy. He's washed up. He's done.
Ask the general manager, Robert Kraft.
And Brady says, no, you know, he was hurt last year. My guy can fix him up, can Mr. Miyagi him up. We can stitch him up and get him out there for one more year, and I want him. I need him. What happens then?
General manager Tom Brady.
See, what you guys are talking about is true, except for you're acting like Gronk's any other player, and you're taking away all the intrigue of the offseason.
I'm not.
Where it's... No, I'm just saying. Like,
Is he going to take
a pay cut? Is he going to, you know, they don't bet on players. All correct. You guys are right.
No, Bill doesn't. But Robert, Chris, you're preaching to the choir. I've said from day one, I told Maz that there's no freaking way that Robert would let Tom Brady go with all the Garoppolo stuff.
I mean, who's going to quarterback the team?
But and
so if it's a package deal, does it really matter how Gronk
all
plays?
All I'm saying is Robert calls the shots. So I'm with you 100% that if Brady lobbies for Gronk, Robert will step in and keep Gronk.
Tom calls the shots.
I think he already did. I think that's why Gronkowski's here in the first place. They had his ass traded for a first-round pick.
You know, yeah, exactly. And, you know, he threatened to retire and the whole way that went down. So, I mean, I think under normal circumstances, you're right, they'd move on from the guy. But these are far from normal circumstances or normal times for the Patriots as they try and figure out their transition.
This year, though, you still think the offense has room for growth, even though Gronkowski is what he is?
I do. I mean, yeah, I don't think it's going to be a vintage Patriots offense. And I won't even talk about the running game because I know how you feel about that. But I still think it's going to be a factor. I do.
Oh, sure it is. Because
they're great on play action.
Because their passing game is good.
And I'll tell you what. Some of the other years where they lost deep in the playoffs or even struggled a little bit in the Super Bowl, teams basically would dare them to run. You'd get into a playoff game and they'd say, we're going to have 7 defensive backs in the field. We dare you to run. They try and run and they couldn't do it. They couldn't do it. And so I think this year, if they get in that circumstance, they can actually do it. And they would force a team to adjust, and that would open up stuff in the passing game.
Fine with me. If your defense can hold them in the low 20s, fine with me. Hand it off. So if you're telling me you now have that
kind of...
Wasn't
that what they did to Jacksonville last year? What was the final score of that game?
Yeah, against Jacksonville, I guess they could do it. So if you're telling me they can go 3 straight in the playoffs with holding teams in the low 20s... Fine, run the ball, go nuts.
But I don't think it would have to be 3 straight. I think history tells you it's normally 1 game where they have to do that, and I think they can do it for a game.
Okay, and I think there's
especially if that game's at home.
And history shows you 1 game, they're gonna have to score in the 30s. But
I agree with that. Yeah, I don't disagree.
Unless they have a great defense. Josh and Webster on this very topic. Go ahead, Josh.
Hey, how's it going, guys? I have a stat that unfortunately supports Spelger's point. From the 2001 to the 2005 playoffs, the Patriots averaged 24.6 points. In the 2014 to the 2017 playoffs, they averaged 33 points in playoff wins.
Thank you. Thank you, Josh. You've done your job.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's disputing. I mean, obviously, that's something that we've been talking about, and I've said to you guys, I mean, it was sort of all on Brady. The whole thing flipped. There's no question about it. I just think that this team has the capability to be a little closer to past Patriots teams where it's more balanced. Where he doesn't have to drop 30 necessarily for them to win.
Okay, let's see. I hope you're right. I hope you're right. We've got Dreds in the car for Murray. Go ahead, Dreds.
Murray, how you doing today, bud?
Great.
Sounds like you're having a rough start. You know, the other day I was thinking about you. You know, I was watching Maz's favorite movie, Dirty Dancing. You know the line, nobody puts baby in the corner? That's you, Murray. You're the baby of the show. You're the star. You're the star of the show. Nobody puts Murray in the corner.
Okay, Dredd.
All right.
Yeah, good grab-ass call.
Boy, that was a bad call.
No, that was painful.
Thank you, Maz.
That's like one of the... No offense, Murray.
No, none taken.
That was one of the worst calls we've ever had.
Chris, I want your thoughts on the Evaldi contract.
Drew, I'm not kidding.
Drew in New Jersey first. Go.
Yes, I think that one of the main reasons that they've overpaid for Evaldi is because they turned David Price around as soon as he arrived on site. They were like chum buddies in the bullpen all postseason. And I think that's kind of an insurance policy to try to keep David Price straight and narrow and try to get him on his contract and his all the money they owe on Price.
Aha. Evaldi's his wingman, and they wanted to make David Price happy, so they signed Evaldi. I don't think that's it, but Chris, what do you think of the Evaldi contract?
Yeah, I don't love it.
Chris.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, somebody with a brain. I mean, you know what's funny? Look, the guy was great in the playoffs. He was outstanding. And he was great with his first couple starts here. But you know, after those first two starts he made, he had a five-start stretch where his ERA was 8.05 and he gave up 38 hits in 19 innings.
Huh.
Like, that got completely erased.
But, interesting.
But why do you look at that and not the postseason then?
Because if I'm paying this guy, if I'm giving this guy 4 years, he's essentially going to be 29 years old. What am I paying for? Am I paying for a fourth starter, a third starter, a second starter, a closer?
A fourth starter.
What am I getting?
Fourth starter. $17 million a year is a third or fourth starter now.
Third or fourth. I think that's a big difference. Third
he's
or
not
fourth.
A third.
So he's a fourth. That just seems like a lot to me. I would be okay with the Red Sox giving him $17 million a year. I know it's like 16.875, but work with me. $17 million a year if it were a three-year deal. I guess here's my point. I'm not giving him both the fourth year and the higher AAV. I think they caved on that. I'll give you one or the other, you know, and I really don't want to give you the fourth year, and I'm the Red Sox, so I'll give you the higher AAV. I just think, you know, what are the odds that 4 years from now we look at that and say that's $17 million well spent?
So we all agree, too much. Yeah. Bad contract.
Yes.
Are you glad the Sox overpaid him to keep him?
No, not really.
So you would have let him walk?
I'm concerned it's going to hamstring them in other ways. And look, I know that's always a tricky conversation with the Red Sox because we look at it and say they should spend the money. But, you know, if at some point somebody draws those purse strings closed and you have that $17 million sitting on there, I mean, I thought last year having like Sandoval's contract on there, and I know they went over, they went to the top and all that other stuff.
I don't think they went over.
But I thought that affected – well, they went up to 237, didn't they?
Yeah, but they didn't go over. It was first reported that they went over, and we think that
we should be getting the final numbers on that any time now.
They might have stayed just below.
I still thought that sort of affected the types of players they were pursuing during the year. I really thought
No question it did.
And so I worry about that sort of moving forward. I don't love the deal. I also think it reeks of, and again, the guy was great. Like, I mean, I love what he did in the playoffs. It was fantastic. But it reeks of sort of recency bias. Like, what's the last thing you saw? Like, you're basing, I feel like the contract's based on the postseason, not the guy's career.
Maz is beaming over there. Look at him.
Because I think that's exactly what I've been saying. There's no way anybody can tell me, without an emotional bias, that Nathan Evaldi is worth $17 million a year over 4 years. There's just no way. It doesn't, the math doesn't add up. And I'm sorry, listen, I hear what you're saying, Mike, what you said earlier, that they're paying him for future performance.
They're projecting what he's going to be.
Okay, I get that. All I'm saying is that the way it has worked with every other player who's ever hit free agency, we look at his career performance and say, what has he been and what can you bank on in theory? And this guy doesn't come anywhere close to $17 million a year.
Your thoughts on Evaldi, your thoughts on the Patriots this week in Miami, the Gronkowski stuff, the Brady and the, you know, what kind of, just how balanced is this team? Is it truly a balanced team? We'll do a Celtics Minute with Gasper as well, all coming away after Murray's update.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
B.O.B. Boob.
Oh, my God. Isn't that Bob?
It's Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Robinson saves it into Kevin Knox. Knox, step back, force a three. It's an air ball. Rebound, Jaylen Brown. He will dribble out the clock, and that is only fitting. Everyone wanted to know what's going to happen when Jaylen Brown returns. Well, all he did was go for 21 in 25 minutes, and the Celtics answer their loss here to the Knicks 15 days ago with a blowout win. The final, Boston 128, New York 100.
All right, Gasper, have the Celtics figured everything out? They all set?
I think they're on the path. I don't think they can say they figured everything out. Let's see them against a little better competition. This is a soft part of the schedule. But I was really encouraged by the way Jaylen Brown played coming off the bench last night. He was great, the 21 points.
All in the paint.
I loved the way he got to the free throw line, nine times. I thought that was great. He attacked. And I'll tell you, I did enjoy that lineup. I thought it was an interesting lineup, and it actually worked. They had the three wings. They had Hayward, Tatum, and Brown on the floor with Rozier and Daniel Tice. And that lineup clicked. That was interesting. You put the three wings in the starting lineup with Kyrie and company, and they don't click. But those three guys in this, you know, in a lineup together off the bench, that was pretty good last night. So it seems like, you know, if Hayward has accepted his role, I know he didn't score a lot last night, but the two baskets he made were threes, and I think that's more and more what his role will be a lot of times on this team. We need you to provide some shooting. That was good. Jaylen Brown came back, played well off the bench, attacked, got to the free throw line, got to the rim. It was good. It seems like they're settling in a little bit. But now I want to see, like, when there's a little more of a – they need, like, a stress test of a Milwaukee or a Toronto or a Philly. Because what happens when you don't get out to a lead or it's not going the way you want? Do they all sort of revert back to, I got this, get out of my way? Or do they stay in their roles and stay sort of, you know, moving the ball with the team?
Here's my question. Because we know if they start to lose, then all that, you know – you're less willing to sacrifice if it results in a loss, because what am I giving? You know, what am I giving this up for if we're not even winning? If you're giving it up and you're winning, you can do it. But I'm even curious about that second thing. If they keep winning, are we sure that Brown can really handle being a bench player? You know, he's never been a bench player. He doesn't view himself as a bench player. Well, same with Gordon Hayward. I mean, do you think they can really 82 games all the way into deep May and June accept those roles, even if they're winning?
Well, I think eventually, you know, one of those guys at least will be back in the starting lineup. But you have to sell them on the idea of not only winning, but it's not about, it's not necessarily about who starts. It's about who finishes, right? So if you're on the floor to finish it.
I'm telling you, they like being introduced, so we've been over this.
Yeah, I know. I understand. But the other thing with Jaylen Brown is you go back to his rookie year, he got yanked around quite a bit by Brad when it came to playing time. So the idea, you know, he's not used to being a bench player. It's been a while, but I mean, his rookie year, he was sort of, you know, in and out in terms of playing time. So no one likes to go backwards, but he has dealt with it before.
So the light's going on over there, okay? Clearly, they're playing better. Even against the competition, you can see it. You know, they've gotten Horford closer to the basket. Brown's going to the hoop now. But I'll tell you what, as I look at it, it took way too long. I'm still pissed off that it took that long. I'm not joking. It shouldn't have taken him 20-something games. They should have been able to figure it out in about 10, maybe 15. Okay, if you go by what happened in Miami when LeBron went there, et cetera, et cetera. About 15 games is where the light goes on. And then all of a sudden it changes.
I don't know. It was more than 15 games into that season with Miami that Chris Bosh was going to the locker room and crying, wasn't it?
I don't remember.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I don't think Miami was fully figured. I think 15 games in, LeBron was bumping Spoelstra as he went back to the huddle for, you know, a timeout. We've been spoiled here, Maz, and I've said we were spoiled by the new Big Three because it was like instant chemistry, right? It was instant.
27-2 or something like that. Wasn't it?
It was ridiculous.
Yeah, they were great, right?
So we've been spoiled by that, and that's the standard. That's the expectation. If you look at a lot of the other teams that have, you know, had to sort of coalesce, it normally doesn't happen as quickly as it did for the 07-08 Celtics. This is a little closer to the norm.
Murray,
too long.
What's your Celtics thought, Murray?
They should be on a 10-game winning streak by the time they get to their next real difficult game, and that's against Milwaukee at home, I think, on December 21st, 22nd.
Yes, December 21st.
Yeah. Who they're playing right now is mediocre at best over the next couple of weeks. Detroit at Detroit might be a bit of a tough game a week from tomorrow. But other than that, they have a lot of crap on their schedule. And with the way that they're playing, and it looks like good team basketball now, it looks like they've figured things out in terms of the starting five, as long as guys can accept it. They should be on a big winning streak over the next couple of weeks.
Okay.
Otherwise, it's unacceptable and they're a fraud.
Okay, there you go.
There you go.
There's your Celtics take, 617-779-0985. Back to your phones. Luke in Rhode Island on Evaldi. Go ahead, Luke.
Yeah, Maz, yesterday you were mentioning what Evaldi's projected at, what the nerds say he's going to be projected at next year. Obviously, to be a win, he's got to produce in the playoffs. But wondering what you and Gasper think in terms of ERA, innings, wins, losses to make it a worthwhile contract.
Okay, what's the bar for you to say that that's a worthwhile contract?
For Evaldi?
Yep. Can I give you mine?
Go ahead.
12-12, sub 4 ERA, and you pitch as well in the postseason.
Oh, yeah, that's worth it.
That's worth 17 nowadays.
So I was instinctively going to say 12-8. Like, and the one loss isn't even a big deal for me. Give me an ERA.
Yeah, I was going to say the same.
Yeah, give me an ERA around 4 and be a weapon again. I'm okay with that. I'm just trying to. I question whether
you don't think he can do that.
I don't know. There's been nothing to suggest that he could do
it. Don't you say the doctor said that the tunnels were the same when they drilled into the elbow and they were able to use the same tunneling, according to Alex Spear, that they did the first time around? And that now the percentage of second time UCL surgeries are now 63% for that, 79% above the norm? You don't read the Spear column?
Yeah. What was the percentage the first time through?
I don't have
73, I think it was, something like that. How come it failed?
Well, Alex would say that that's not much of a drop from 73 to 63 to and I can't remember how he phrased it.
Okay, I don't care how Alex phrased it. What I'm saying is, if he had a 73% chance of success the first time, then how did his elbow blow up a second time?
It didn't blow up. It was just a little tweak. They needed to go in there, but they didn't. The tunnels were the same.
Oh, it was a tweak. That's what it was. A tweak that missed the whole season.
I'm just telling you what was reported in the Globe.
Yeah, tweak. Okay. Listen, I'm sorry. I'm sorry people are getting pissed off about this because the guy's a World Series hero, and he earned the contract based on, when I say earned it, how he pitched in October, and I'm happy for him because guys like him, I like seeing get deals. Okay, there's nothing I hate more than the superstar who gets a big deal and then shuts it down. This guy had to fight for his money, and he got it. Okay, so good for him. But anybody who tells me that that deal is a fair deal is on drugs. You are completely high. You are out of your mind high. There's no way that deal is a fair deal. Evaldi absolutely bent them over, pulled down their pants, and spanked Dombrowski's red ass. That's what he did. He spanked him red.
Final word, it comes your way in an hour. A big, long commercial-free segment comes your way next.
This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
At the end of your ride home, you'll be all caught up.
If you get suspended again, you're going to miss playoff time, or you're going to miss time in the playoffs.
Or questioning your judgment.
Sorry I brought it up.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
When you start practicing in August and you play all the way to January, that's a grind, my man. That's a grind. And it's going to be a grind for a guy who's 40-plus years old. So he right now is about to hit his stride and probably play some of his best football. He doesn't have to drive the ball 30, 40 yards down the field. He doesn't have to hit 25-yard comebacks on the outside and throw it like Pat Mahomes in order to be effective. You saw against the Minnesota Vikings. He can still utilize the short to intermediate game and the long touch game as well as anybody. And remember this, Josh McDaniels is one of the best play callers in the NFL. He knows when to make Tom throw the fastball and when then he can just dink and dunk you and kill you to death by a thousand cuts with screen passes, little short swing routes, run the football, screen pass, go over top. They're one of the best in the NFL. They're about to right now, you're about to enter their season. Now this is their time where they actually usually separate themselves.
Lewis Riddick there on ESPN with a little Patriots porn for you out there. He says Brady's about to hit his stride. It's his time. I think he's responding. My guess is, I don't know how it was set up. That was this morning on ESPN. Did you happen to see Brady's spray chart on the next gen thing?
I did, yeah.
Okay, so
yeah.
He only completed five balls beyond 5 yards in this game against Minnesota. Only five balls beyond 5 yards. Usually, like the stat you read is 10 yards. 5 yards? So he didn't even, you know, he only had a handful of balls over 6 freaking yards. They were all dink and dunks, okay? Do you think there was something to that other than game plan?
Not really. I mean, because when they needed it, he had the go-ahead drive. It was sandwiched, you know, bookended by 24-yard completions to Josh Gordon. So I think it's more game plan because of the respect they had for Harrison Smith. In that defense, but I don't think it was like, you know, sore arm situation. Also, it's the guys they have, right? Who's going to really stretch the field for them? Gordon can do it a little bit, but traditionally this offense has stretched the field down the seam with Gronkowski. You throwing that to him right now?
No.
No. So, I mean, I don't see James White. Unless James White runs a wheel route, how's that going to be down the field? Burkhead? Is Edelman going down the field?
So can they live that way?
Yeah, they've done it in the past. I mean, that's basically their offense.
Yeah, well, that's what Riddick says. So.
Well, I do have to say, even though I agree with Riddick, and I was like, this is great, he's defending Brady, I love it. But, you know, Riddick is a little biased because if Josh McDaniels had taken the 49ers job, guess who was lined up to be his general manager?
Well, he did call Josh McDaniels one of the best play callers in the NFL.
Oh, of course he did, yeah.
I mean, I heard
he
that
did.
Part. Is he? Is he one of the best play callers in the league?
He's really good. You got to give it to him. But I'm just saying, Riddick would say that no matter what, because this guy's like his entree back into the NFL.
I mean, do we sit there with like, I'm asking. I don't know. But I don't feel like I sit there every week and go, oh, what a great call. Or do I look at it and go,
what the hell are you calling a jet sweep on 3rd and 3 and going to Cordell Patterson for?
I think their coaching this year has been exceptional. Can we pick apart individual plays by Josh? Of course, like with any coordinator.
Yeah, he gets too cute sometimes. But
I think this year, when you talk about, you know, who gets the credit for being where they are, Brady, defense, coach, I go coaching this year. I think the coaching has put him in the best position this year, more than any other player or side of the ball. So I think Josh is a big part of that.
Yeah, like I said, my only issue with Josh is I just think sometimes he gets too cute. You know, it's like, okay, direct snap to James White, or like, we're down in this game, let's throw a double pass and get the quarterback's knee hurt. Like, some of that stuff I could do without. But overall, from a game plan standpoint and how to attack the opposing team create matchups, he's good at that. He is good at that.
Just look at how many tight windows does Brady ever really have to throw in? He did, I'd say the first touchdown against the Jets to Gronk was a freaking in the mail slot, tight window. You know, he was covered. Great ball. But for the most part, like the Gordon, I mean.
No, Gordon was wide open.
You know, so, and credit Gordon for recognizing zone versus man and sitting down there and all that. But I think the coach have done a great job where Brady's, you know, thrown into some pretty big windows. And so, I don't know. I think it's coaching.
And you know, Brady gets credit for all those passes where they snap it to him and he just, like, touch passes it forward on the jet sweep. He gets credit for that stuff. So, you know, I mean, it's smart. Other teams do it. But the great thing about that play, you run that play. If the ball hits the ground, it's an incomplete pass. Instead of on a jet sweep, hits the ground, it's a fumble. So, just little stuff like that they do.
I don't see it with McDaniels the way you guys do. I'm not telling you he sucks.
Many other play callers do you watch, though, on a given week? I know you have Game Pass. Do you go back and what are you going back and watching to see, like, you know, what's going on in Chicago?
I would say that Andy Reid's a good play caller. I would say that the guy with the Rams is good.
Sean McVay's very good. Yes.
So I see some innovation there in their offense. I see some creativity. They also have more talent than the Patriots do, at least at the skill positions. I'm not talking about quarterback. So, like, those to me are guys that are good play callers. I never feel like the Patriots do anything extraordinary. I mean, just me. Like, I feel like, generally speaking, the whole thing's been built around Brady.
I think this year it's been schemed tremendously.
Yeah, I think they have some good stuff in there.
On both sides of the ball. Peter Norwood, what do you got?
Come on, Tony. They've been better than that. They're 9-3. Give me a break. Actually, you know what? I was going to go a different direction.
Here we go. Go Dolphins.
Good God.
Go Dolphins.
Tony, Peter, stop being such a baby.
Who would you take over them in the AFC to represent the AFC in the Super Bowl?
I think Kansas City's better.
Even without Hunt?
And how did Kansas City do in New England? I forget how that game went.
They lost 43-40, but they scored 31 points in 10 minutes in the second half.
Yeah,
Miami
frankly.
Dolphins,
would you agree Kareem Hunt, though, is their second best player?
Not second best player, no. He's probably third or fourth best.
Who are you putting ahead of him, Kelsey?
Yep, Mahomes, Kelsey, yep, maybe even Tyreek Hill.
Peter, you like him in the Super Bowl, huh?
Kareem Hunt with the NFL in rushing last year.
So you like the Kansas City schedule versus our schedule?
Okay, enough of the questions. God, not doing the back and forth. What? Give me your take and get off the phone. Jesus.
That should be the slogan for this show.
No, seriously.
Can we cut a promo with that? Give me your take and get off the phone.
You're on the witness stand, not us. If there's any back and forth, we ask you. You don't ask us. Okay, it's our show.
I don't mind being on the witness stand. It's fine. I'm sorry. I disagree with you. Whatever his name was.
You learned from the master, Felger.
Like, all of a sudden now Kansas City. So I worry about the Kareem Hunt thing, too. I do. I think that's a big loss for Kansas City, but not because he led the league in rushing. Because he's a guy who can stay on the field for all three downs.
Well, I'll tell you why that's a big loss, though, against the Patriots. He tortures the Patriots because they have no one who can cover him out of the backfield.
Exactly.
And so for that matchup for Kansas City to not have Hunt, that's huge. For their season, but specifically against the Patriots, because they have had no answer for him out of the backfield the couple of times they've played him.
Okay, I think the home road thing is important.
The game's in Kansas City, I like KC.
Yeah, and I can't say that about Houston.
I refuse to take that team seriously.
You would take Houston at home against the Patriots in the playoffs?
I would.
Would you, Gasper?
So wait, what's the question? You're saying Houston could beat the Patriots
in Houston?
Oh, in Houston? I'm with Maz on that. I think every dog has its day, and Watson is a guy who gave them problems, not this year, but when he was the real Deshaun Watson, which he is again, his rookie year, the type of mobile quarterback who can run around, and he can actually throw, unlike some of these other guys. Like, I'm not impressed in the least with Trubisky. Like, to me, that guy can't really throw, you know, but Watson can throw. And so you get that team. They have Demaryius Thomas now. That defense has been really, really good. And eventually, like, all the other apprentices seem to beat Bill. When does O'Brien get his turn?
No. He's had enough chances. And every time he gets tight. And I'm with you. Like, they have a lot of good personnel.
They do.
They look way better than they did in week one. It'd be 3rd and 4, must have in the fourth quarter. And you think, okay, he's going to, you know, 5 wide here, let Deshaun Watson try to make a play. And no, he wouldn't. He'd try to hand off to Alfred Blue, and he'd get stopped in the backfield because he tightens up. He's a boob.
I'll tell you, the other guy that scares me on that team now from the Patriots is Lamar Miller. Like, you know, because I add it all up.
So running backs matter then?
No. He can catch the ball.
Oh. Out of the backfield, he is good at that.
I mean, I just think it's, again, it's one of those teams that I look at now and say, Demaryius Thomas is a second receiver with DeAndre Hopkins. They got a couple of tight ends that aren't great, but they're not bums. They're okay. And Lamar Miller can catch the ball out of the backfield. Like, how are the Patriots going to cover that team down there?
What if they had to go to L.A.?
The Chargers are good. On paper, the Chargers are the team that would match up the best with the Patriots. However, there is an inherent boob factor with the Chargers, and it doesn't matter who the coach is. They just shoot themselves in the foot. And that's what the concern would be for me. Now, the Chargers are top 10 in the NFL in both offense and defense. They can get after the passer. The secondary is good with Casey Hayward, Desmond King, and Derwin James. They have all the components on paper, but that's the type of team that you look at it. They'd be in position to win the game. All they'd have to do is run out the clock, and then they'd throw like three passes and punt it to the Patriots, and it would be like a shank punt, and the Patriots would march down the field and get the winning points.
It's so true.
That's exactly how it would go.
Houston scares me more than San Diego.
That would be a home game.
San Diego doesn't scare me at all because they don't have a team.
Well, L.A., they're at a soccer stadium, and they can't even fill it with their own fans, so that would be like a Pats home game.
Right. Let me see what happens the next 2 weeks.
Oh, that'd be great. You'd like that, right? Like Ben Affleck showing up to that playoff game, and yeah, that'd be great.
Stick a microphone in his face, name a player, huh?
If the Pats get home field, McCone's gonna be ball gagging me because they'll probably win their home games.
McCone's familiar with it. He probably already owns all that stuff.
On the road, all bets are off. Gasper, thanks for coming.
The dark side of McBone.
Good to see you guys.
Okay, no commercials, just an update. A final agenda-free hour with your wonderful phone calls right after this.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.